Well, hello everybody. My name is Nigel Pope, founder and host of the 55 East Revelations podcast, where we discuss economics, money, and ideas for investments. I'm a former financial derivatives salesman, stock market investor, and author. And before we get into the conversation, a quick mention to our sponsors and partners. 55EastFX.com, a global money transfer service for high net worths and corporates, and QTradeFX.com, a leading CFD and crypto trading platform here in the Middle East. And back to today, it's my pleasure to have Boris Grozev as my guest. Boris is a fintech executive, and as an entrepreneur, Boris has helped a number of businesses to create and implement business development and product enhancement strategies. His advisory work in emerging and frontier markets has promoted culture and technology change, fostered innovation, and led to tangible results. Personally, he invests in a variety of asset classes and is going to share his experiences of his journey to financial independence. Boris is a fast learner whose leadership abilities, ambition, stamina, passion to succeed, and attitude naturally spread to others, helping to achieve common goals. Welcome, Boris.
Nice to see you, Nigel. Thank you for having me here. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. So I'd like to start off by asking you, first question really is, what was it, or still is it, that motivated you on your journey to where you are today?
Well, to be honest, what motivates me, I guess, goes down to three things. First one is learning new things. Second, eventually helping others. And then third, being successful. It's as simple as that, as easy as that, really.
How do you define your success?
Success is something very difficult to define, I guess. It's something that is very personal. For some people, success is related to money. For other people, success is related to being healthy. For third type of people, success is having a big family. So I guess success for myself personally is a balance between a number of components.
Yeah. And currently, I mean, the balance always changes. Currently, where are you in that balance right now? Are you trying to improve monetary side or family side? Where is it right now for you?
Right now I'm on the side whereby I'm trying to change and switch from being an advisor and then working for someone full time to kind of start working for myself. And I want to build a business which is going to be based on my values.
Yeah.
As opposed to, maximizing profits, which is something very challenging and I find not easy to do.
No, I mean, the values part I think is very important in achieving success, because if your goals aren't aligned with your values, then I think the mind tends to have a bit of a dichotomy and an argument with itself, if you like. So I think the values side of things is very important. I think defining our values before we actually head towards our goal is quite an important step.
Absolutely.
What values in that regard do you find important or important to you?
So one of the very important values to myself personally is being fair with myself, being fair with others, being fair with the society. I think this is something which is really important, right?
In that is trust.
Obviously being trustful, being trustworthy, being as good as you can. Essentially in what you do, doing your personal best. I think it's also another value that I have. When it comes to the value conversation, I think that the environment is something which is really important to me. And I think it's important to many, right?
Yeah.
We're going to make sure that we keep clean ourselves, the places where we live in, and the planet as a third kind of step, if it makes sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, so your journey currently where you are, you're working for a large institution.
Yeah.
And you have to go out and meet a lot of people, different clients. What do you most enjoy about that?
It's learning, because you can learn from each and every single different person in each and every single country, I guess, that you go to. Over the last almost 10 years, I think I have met literally thousands of people. I have interacted with over the phone with more than 10,000 people, I guess.
Yeah.
I've covered about 750 different institutions across 8 countries, and I've interacted mainly with senior financial executives on the C-level type of staff or in the front office MD level.
C-level, just explain to listeners what C-level is.
Yeah, C-level, that would be the decision makers of an organization, I guess. So this will be the people who will be part of the executive committee, and then they'll be taking decisions when it comes to business strategy, when it comes to people strategy, when it comes to navigating the environment and then driving the business forward, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think they have certain qualities or characteristics at that level?
I think it's...
Certain common characteristics?
That's a good question. I think that they tend to have quite a few of those, actually. People who are at the top, they tend to be very responsible.
Yeah.
They like take responsibilities not only for themselves but for others as well, and then for organizations.
Yeah.
They do not mind saying sorry. They do not mind admitting that they have made a mistake, which is also a very common thing that I've seen. Everyone is really, really hard working, and everyone loves what they do.
Mm.
That's very, very common as well. Wherever you would go, you would see people that actually have a passion for what they do. You occasionally may see people who don't have that passion, or they have lost that passion somewhere. But usually these are the people who do not stay long at the top. This is very natural. In terms of other qualities, I would think that people are usually super smart at that level.
Yes.
They're also very proactive.
Mm.
When it comes to being proactive, you know, sometimes say you would agree on something with someone, and then that someone would be already asking his assistant or sending an email for the thing that you have agreed on to be done while you're still in the meeting. So that kind of proactivity and getting things done is just fascinating, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's interesting because those qualities, I've noticed those as well. Now, when I had a chat with Charles Monchot, which comes out as a podcast next week, I noticed those same qualities. So very hardworking, very sharp, very sharp-minded, analytical, methodical, especially with his answers, to the questions. Very well organised, and he loves what he does. Yeah, we had a great conversation. Yeah, the breadth and depth of knowledge is huge. It's very, very impressive. So in that regard, I could identify with what you were saying as common qualities.
One thing that we probably missed saying is that usually people at that type of level, they're very fit. And then when I say fit, I mean both physically and mentally.
Mm.
Because the nature of their work is so, so demanding that if they're not, they cannot really do it.
Yeah.
They would be also very conscious of what they eat and then how they use their time. This is something that I've noticed quite often as well.
Yeah, so you would have picked up hopefully some of those traits yourself.
As they say in this part of the world, inshallah, you know.
That's right, because what we haven't told listeners is that we're still in Dubai. Podcast is coming from the Media One Hotel business centre. There's no one around, so it's nice and quiet, which is way better than a hotel room. Right, let's shift over to fintech.
Sure.
Where are we currently in the environment of fintech, and how do you think it'll evolve from your perspective that you're seeing currently?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and then
it's a big one.
I would ask you how many minutes do you have for how many hours, because I can talk about that for hours and hours.
Okay, well let's perhaps we should start with challenger banks.
Right, challenger banks. Yeah. That's a huge thing.
Likes of Revolut, Monzo.
And, and many others.
And
right?
many others, yeah.
So definitely there's a lot of stuff happening, not only in the financial sector, right? There are the new technologies that are coming, and then the consumers that are changing, and then the intersection of those two plus the regulation, I guess, has given birth to what we call fintech.
Yeah.
When it comes to challenger banks, I think that some of them, they have built fantastic technologies. However, these technologies have been possible because of the record low interest rates, and then because of the cheap funding that they have had access to. I think that, and then it's not only that, I'm thinking factually, their business models, I guess, are yet to be proven, and then they're yet to find ways of making money. However, I think that at the stage where we are at the moment, consumers are winning, because if you are a simple retail customer, and say you live in the UK, and then you want to open a bank account, and you want to transfer money, and you want to travel the world, things like Revolut or Monzo are absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
They save you time, they save you money, they're hassle-free, I'd say, very easy to use, widely accepted everywhere. You can, you know, perhaps pick up a few good habits if you have one of those apps, and then know where your money goes.
That's
and eventually
right.
start thinking of investing at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let's not forget 55 East FX as well. That's a good one for corporates, isn't it?
That's a fantastic piece of technology.
Well, it is. It's the technology that's behind it. You know, the sales arm sits on top, and there's the tech behind it. And but tech really is driving all these changes, isn't it? To get a better overall experience for the consumer, and at a lower cost, because that's basically what it's all about.
Absolutely. To be honest, I think finance is one of those industries which is late, and it is late with the change, and then late with adopting new technology, I guess. Because if you look at things like, mobile phones or air travel or whatever else might be, you know, when was the last time that you went to buy a plane ticket from an agency? When was the last time you did that?
That's a very good question. I can't remember.
Yeah, but you know, there's till this day, there are probably hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, in the UK and especially here in the GCC that are still going to the bank to get a checkbook or to sign a form for a payment, or to unblock their debit card because they traveled somewhere. Mm. So these are things that are still very common. So the financial services sector is definitely going to see a lot of changes in the next couple of years. They'll be all exciting, and I'm very curious to see how the incumbents, the big companies today are going to navigate that environment, and whether they're going to be the big companies of tomorrow as well.
Well, quite. I mean, it's interesting. Banco Santander purchased eBury, or 51% of eBury, which is in fact the platform that 55E sits on as a sales arm, and they paid $350 million for it. Euros, dollars, I can't remember which. Neither here nor there. But that's a big step. And what does that tell you about the legacy banks? At least it tells me then that the technology is way more important, because eBury are not making any money at present. It's all being ploughed into improving tech and the overall service, which is very similar to Revolut, Monzo. I think Monzo posted $48 million loss, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Revolut, God knows, God alone knows how much they're losing, because the funding rounds just keep coming. So let's see. I mean, I don't know what the potential is for actually making any money as an investment on them is right now, but definitely for the incumbents, it's great for them, because they've got the customers, and they need to improve their offering. And how do you do it quickly?
I think you go and
buy someone.
I mean, to be honest, the nature of the work that I do has led me to meet many banks in different countries, in more than 10 countries, right? And one thing which is very common in all these countries is that you tend to see that the infrastructure of the banking sector is, I would say, everywhere rather old. It's not only old, but it's not integrated. The banks, they have huge challenges, and then it costs them literally billions of dollars to make one system talk to another system. And then fact of the matter is that they have, especially the legacy players that have been around for a while, they have many, many systems that are very complex, difficult to maintain, hard to replace. And for them, it's very difficult to do that change, to go digital, and then to be digital not only on the front end by, you know, creating a nice fancy app and then having a great website, an easy to use website, an easy to use payment system or whatever it might be, but actually, you know, connecting all the dots together and then making sure that everything works as it should, and it's efficient, and it saves costs, and this and that. I think this is a huge, huge challenge. I'm convinced that many financial institutions will have a hard time to cope with that. They'll have a very hard time to cope with that.
Yeah. Now, you've been in the Middle East a couple of years. How is it in the Middle East in comparison? How far behind, or are there any initiatives?
I mean, I guess the Middle East, it's a complex region, right? So over here, the big players, the national players, they have not been around for that long time, right? You take any of the big financial institutions in the Middle East, be it in the Emirates, be it in Saudi Arabia, be it in any of the other countries, you would notice that all these banking institutions have really grown over the last 20, 25 years. This is the reason why they have probably an easier challenge when it comes to changing their infrastructure. However, the culture of the region comes into play as well.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure how quick people in the region here are able to adopt change, how quickly they can actually adopt change and then look into the future and live the future. I think that this the mindset might be the bigger challenge. And I also think that in big finance in London, where I worked for a number of years, is also facing the same issue. Finance is a very, I would say, traditional community. People, if you look at how, say, you've been a derivative salesman for many years, and then what you have done in the late 90s or in the late 80s or in the late, 2015, did not change that much. At the end of the day, you have a phone.
That's right.
You have a chatting system.
Yeah.
You pick up the phone. You maybe call a client and then say, "Hey, how are you? How's your business?
Can we do some business?"
Yeah. What do you think about that? And then this is how the business is done.
Yeah.
I mean, the distribution channel in wholesale finance has not changed. It's the exact same thing. And then even the way people dress, I think in financial institutions, tells us quite a bit. The dress code is very formal.
Very
right?
True. Yeah.
People dress with suits and ties as they used to do in the 60s.
But no bowler hat.
Absolutely, even the watches that they wear, right?
Yeah, status symbols.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's well.
Sorry about that.
Absolutely. I mean, you have these type of things which are an indication of the complexity of the environment where we are in the sector.
Yeah. No, interesting. It's an interesting view. Now, in terms of investments, do you have anything that's fintech related to investments?
So I think that fintech is something which is first of all a buzzword these days, right? Everything which is fintech is good, and everyone jumps on it without necessarily looking at the details. The devil is always in the detail. Also, my understanding is that there are not many publicly available traded companies that are in the fintech space.
Right, yeah, probably. Yeah, I haven't actually Okay.
So it's very difficult to
being aware.
It's very difficult to invest in one of those.
Yes, unless, mostly private, aren't they?
Unless you are investing via a private equity fund, or you are an angel investor, or via venture capital, or you come in as an advisor or as a founder or whatever it might be. I think that there will be great companies that will come out of that innovation which is currently happening, and then we are yet to see who these are.
Yeah. Wait and see is the watchword.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. So let's now turn to generating investment income. You know, we all want to know, what can we do, maybe as a sideline business or something a little bit alternative from our day jobs, how we can earn extra, let's call it investment income, or generate income. What is your strategy at present as an individual investor, and what do you look for?
So first, before we can start investing, we need to have something to invest. So in order to have something to invest, I guess that many people need to understand that living slightly below their paycheck tag is actually okay.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't really matter how much money you make. It matters how much money you can actually save in order to potentially go and invest. So step number one is to realize the fact that you need to probably live slightly below your means, and then say put something aside every month, 10, 20, 30%, whatever you are comfortable with, whatever your current expenses are. So once you have that, then you have different avenues, right?
Absolutely.
It depends how much you want to be involved when it comes to generating investment income, right? So the more you want to be involved, the more avenues you have. The less you want to be involved, the less avenues you have. I think that the easiest things to do in such a case scenario are probably to invest in property. So you do something like buy to let, be it here in the region, be it back in the UK, be it whatever else you feel comfortable with the legislation. If you do something like that, it's important to understand what are the drivers behind the property market where you wanna invest. It's important to understand what is the legislation.
Yeah.
It's important to understand that once you actually have a property, you need to manage it. If you're gonna be managing it yourself, and then you need to maintain it, and then this takes time and money. If you wanna hire an agency, this costs you
that
something.
But it takes away.
So it's a fine balance.
Yeah.
When it comes to publicly available investment schemes, I think that we live in great times. And then there's at the moment there are a lot of ETFs that people can benefit from, and then they can be obviously a source of passive income. We're about to close 2019 already, right?
Yes.
And I think S&P has done about 20% as we stand today.
Yes, yeah. Trump keeps trumping the stock market.
Trump is great. another interest rate cut, and then even 2020 is going to be better.
Yeah. Interestingly, Charles Monchot pointed out that he said it's probably one of the slowest economic expansions in history, which is why it's gone on for 11 years. And in his view, I think he said in his view, don't quote me on that, he probably expects more to come. We've got another couple of years.
See, that's a very interesting one. I mean, because of the nature of many things, I guess, of where rates are, and then of where international politics is, and of where the stock market is, the situation is very difficult, and then very difficult to choose whether to invest or whether to stay cash, right? Fact of the matter is that as long as the interest rates are low, stock markets are going to perform.
Correct.
However, when something happens, it might be an event, because that might be just like a simple event. There may be a plane that falls somewhere in the middle of Brazil or I don't know what may happen. There might be one little event that triggers a huge, huge crash because markets are not rational.
That's very true.
Markets are not rational.
We don't know what can trigger it, but trigger it can. It can happen that way. I do agree with you, though, that as long as the Fed keeps rates low or lower...
Yeah, that's also an option. Lower is an option.
There's more to come.
But the problem is that the more rates are going down, the bigger the discrepancy between the real economy and then the life of ordinary citizens.
Yeah.
And then the financial economy and then the financial markets become, right?
That's
so
right.
That gap grows bigger and bigger as function of the declining interest rates. At least this is my impression. And then one of the reasons, some of the reasons that could potentially explain what's happening in Britain with Brexit or what's happening in America with Trump and what happens in a bunch of other countries with kind of right-wing populist parties grabbing more of the public attention can be explained partly with that, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because what it does is inflate asset values, obviously stock market, property, and other assets, the so-called everything bubble. And at the same time, if you inflate assets, only the holders of the assets are beneficiaries, and in particular of the cash flows, because when you put more money into an economy, you print more money, you're effectively inflating the money supply. So what does that do to the existing money supply? It reduces its value. So if you don't hold any assets, the poorest in society are the ones that suffer. And this probably is what we allude to in the populist politics now, because they're the ones feeling the hard end of all this money printing. So it's great for the wealthy, not great for the poor. Good, okay, well, let's move off that slightly. Talk a little bit about something personal to you in terms of failures. We all learn from failures, and what failure changed your outlook on life and changed you, do you think?
Well, to be honest, I've been lucky to have failed many times. I have many things. One of the funny stories is actually when at some point we decided with my brother that we're going to have a wine distribution business in the UK. So this is something that didn't go quite well, and then 8 months down the line we had to close the business because we didn't do enough research about how the distribution networks work. We didn't do enough research about what the particular taste for white and red wine of the consumer is. So we failed on that, but...
You didn't research your market properly then?
No, we didn't research our market.
You just jumped head first?
No, we jumped head first, and then we said, you know what, we actually, another mistake that we did is that we told that, it's going to be very easy, you just go, you buy something, you sell something, easy business, call it trade, very, very easy. Fact of the matter is, nothing is easy. Nothing happens overnight. So these are my key takeaways of that. And then the third takeaway that we had is that after we failed that business, and essentially we saw that we're not going to be in a position to run it because it actually costs us more to run it than to fail it. We ended up having about, 8,000 bottles of wine in our shed. So that was... It tasted fine after the first 300 bottles were all right, and then the next 200 were given away in all sorts of house parties, and then whatever you would be invited, you would bring a bottle of wine, and then after we
always invited,
always invited, of course, but then after that, it didn't taste good, and then we had to liquidate the stock, and it was funny. But the key takeaways, as I mentioned, I guess, for me at least, were first, do your due diligence. Second, don't think that because someone else is doing something, this is easy, and then you can do it as well. Nothing is easy. Also, don't think that things happen quickly. Patience is very, very important. In my view, there is no overnight success. People need to be more patient in the world where we live in, right?
Absolutely.
The problem is that it is difficult to be patient. Reason being is that we're always connected to Instagram, Facebook, and then we live in a world of instant gratification, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
Instagram. Insta gratification.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. If I were to say to you, price is what you pay, but value is what you get, what does that say to you? Do you think that's an important saying?
Probably it is. But what I would say to you is, it's important to get the value for what you pay, because often it's the other way around. As you say, I don't mind paying the price as long as I get the value, but I need to get the value first. Yes. Or at least I need to see the value first.
I like the way you've turned that around. It's very, very good. Yeah, very good. Okay, so we're gonna come on to one of my favorite topics that everyone knows now, is Bitcoin. What's your take on Bitcoin, Boris?
I mean, I love the technology bit. I think that the technology bit is something that can change many industries, and then that's, blockchain technology is great. I think that the applications that blockchain technology can have.
What in particular is special about blockchain technology?
So mine, obviously I'm not a specialist in the field, but one of my key takeaways of understanding that piece of technology is that you can store information safely without being to overwrite it, right?
Yes.
So that's something which is fundamentally important for the supply chain process, for example. Which is
provenance.
Exactly.
It's a guaranteed
absolute
check of where something has come from and or where it's been along the supply chain.
So that's one. I think this is fundamentally important for trade, right? Especially if you know how international trade is done and how letters of credit are issued, and then the number of documents that you need in order to have a physical trade transactions from one place to another. This is something that can definitely change that process and then make it easier and more secure, right? So that's
because it can't be changed chronologically. Absolutely. It can't be changed,
yeah. And it can be verified by a network, right?
Okay.
So it can be also transparent. So this is something which is great, and I think can change that particular industry. Not only if you look at servicing your car, this is something that that can help with servicing your car. If you go and buy a second-hand car, you would know that your car has been serviced.
Wow!
Whatever it has been.
Big changes for the car dealers.
Yeah. But 20 years down the line, you never know, right? Was it yesterday or a couple of days ago when Tesla came up with a truck which is now electric and more powerful than F-150, right?
Apparently so.
At least this is what they claim.
Yeah.
Should we believe them?
Yeah.
When it comes to Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin, I'm not entirely sure whether it is an investment and whether it is a form of investment. I see it more as a...
Why do you say that?
Because it's not regulated. I mean,
does an investment need to be regulated, in your view? And if so, why?
Okay, so let's take a step back. If you are an individual, I would encourage everyone who is an individual investor to go and look at regulated investments. The reason for that is that many people are crooks and they're out there to essentially screw you and then take your hardly earned monies and just profit from them, right? So this is one of the things, right? Regulated investments, they give you an understanding of what are you buying. I'm not entirely sure whether all the people around the world who have bought bitcoins and have a digital wallet have actually an understanding of what they bought. So that's one. So this is the reason why I was saying that I'm unsure whether Bitcoin is an investment, right?
Right.
So Bitcoin is a...
What do you think it is then, if it's not an investment?
I think it's an alternative store of digital value.
Okay.
So for me, Bitcoin is something which is kind of opposite the system, right? The less confident you are that the current financial system is going to remain in place, you probably go on and look at alternative bets.
Yeah.
And then one of these alternative bets might be Bitcoin along with others, right?
Yeah.
What's the reason for people to buy physical gold?
As an insurance policy, I would say.
Exactly.
It's hard money.
Well, is it really
it's
hard
heavy
money? I mean, is it really hard money? How can you, if you have gold, how can you go and exchange it for goods?
It's not a medium of exchange or an easy medium of exchange. It's not easily divisible these days, that's for sure. I guess silver would have fulfilled that role to a certain extent for day-to-day purchases. Bitcoin could fulfill that role to an extent. It's very easily divisible. It seems to be a store of value, albeit a volatile one.
Is it really a store of value when you have digital wallets disappearing all the time?
That's a very good question. If that is the case, then no, it's not a good store of value. if you can't find your digital wallet, or it gets stolen,
or it just disappears because of a bug, and then what happens? What happens when there is a system update of the Bitcoin network? Is that a case scenario? What can happen? How about if there was a hacker attack?
Yeah.
Or if there was like a Russian troll factory or something like that. I mean, people need to be careful with these things. However, Bitcoin is something that that exists, and then Bitcoin is something that should be looked at, should be understood. Even probably in a case scenario where people know what they're doing, this is something that might be even added to a cold wallet, So this is something that can be looked at.
Yeah. So
this is my take on that. I mean.
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting take, especially from someone in the financial services industry. Do you think it'll succeed as money, or do you think, if it can overcome these issues, do you think it'll succeed as money, or what will it become if it doesn't become money?
I mean, that's a great question, right? I should probably answer it with another question. What happened to all these .com stocks in 2000 on the Black Monday of 2001?
Yeah.
They were there, and then they were great, and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
What happened to Enron? It was there and was great, and
there was a lot. I think there was quite a few lies and shenanigans going on behind the scenes, as vaporizing assets that weren't real assets.
Well, is Bitcoin a real asset? Is it backed by anything?
I'm told it's backed by maths.
You're not.
So I'll take a step back and say, you are very much skeptical on Bitcoin.
I mean, that's your personal
takeaway.
That's
my take.
I mean, I'm not skeptical. I'm trying to be logical, right? People have to be. See, if you wanna invest in something, or if you wanna or if you want to build a business, or if you want to do something, there needs to be a process, right?
Mm.
And then you need to understand what are you doing, right?
Yeah.
If I asked you and said, hey, Nigel, do you mind? And I actually had an example like that very recently. Do you mind doing like a marathon with me? And then he said, yeah, all right. And then you go and then you buy like a marathon race, and then you don't understand what you have jumped in, right? You don't understand what is the pain and what is the process that you have to go through training, in order to finish a marathon. So I would encourage everyone to go and then do the due diligence first. Learn from my mistakes. Yeah. Don't keep 8,000 bottles of wine in your shed. It's not gonna help.
Very good. So successful people tend to plan ahead. What business and personal ambitions do you envisage for yourself over the next 18 months, 3 years?
I mean, there are many things that I have planned, and I guess it's all gonna be visible in the next couple of months.
Oh.
It's all gonna be public. I guess on the web in the next 3 months.
Wonderful.
And then
okay.
I'll be in touch with you certainly, and I'll share the details. There are a few exciting things coming up.
I can't wait.
That I'm working on, and then hopefully we'll help quite a few people.
Great. All right. I can't wait for that, Boris. Thanks for joining us today. It's been a great discussion, and one I'm sure our listeners will enjoy and learn from. And just so our listeners can find out where you are, tell us your websites and.
Thank you. You can basically go and look me up on LinkedIn, I guess.
Yeah.
So you can go and then. Look me up on LinkedIn, or you can go and then eventually read my blog. It's mynamemysurname.com.
So www.borisgrozev.com. Brilliant.
And thank you very much for having me, Nigel.
Yeah,
it's
pleasure.
Great having a chat with you. I'm always learning.
Likewise.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers.